This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Like a machine, making more podcasts than you've ever seen. Now he's finally back for more interviews. I hope you missed him, cause he sure missed you. It's the Taran Show. The Taran Show. Now he's all booted up and ready to go. It's the Taran Show. A simple name for a simple guy with a simple face. It's the Taran Show.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Taran Show. This week I am talking with a YouTube star. It is Peridium. Peridium from YouTube. He runs a channel that talks primarily about Survivor and Big Brother, little video essays on the show. It's very, very good. I also play Among Us / Goose Goose Duck with him every weekend over on Twitch. He's a great guy, and I had a lot of fun talking to him. So here we go. Let's talk with Peridium. So Peridium is not your real name.
It's not in my birth certificate.
who are you really, Peridium?
I'm just a guy doing things, making videos on the internet, hanging out in a weird neon room. You can see it, but I know this is audio, but yeah. Who am I really? I don't know, a miserable pile of secrets, I guess.
Yeah.
the original rough draft of what Peridium came to be was actually just my real name, which is why like my Twitter handle is my real name. My Instagram handle is my real name. It's just the YouTube thing that everyone knows me for is not my real name. So I've never really like shied away from using my real name. It just eventually turned into something else. And that's what eventually got me in some ways here talking to you today. But you know, who am I? My real name is Billy and I make YouTube videos for a living on Survivor and Big Brother.
Yeah. Well, how did that start?
Oh boy. It started a while ago. I mean, it started originally in 2017. That was when I made my first video, 5 years ago, 4.5 years ago. But it goes way before that. Like I got into Survivor. I watched the original seasons, loved it, but then dropped out of it like most of America, I think. Came back into it in 2009. I became a huge fan of RHAP right after that in 2010 when Rob started his thing. That really sucked me. And I think that gave me a lot of life. Diving deeper into it. And then there's a lot of steps to get to there if we want to go over it. But for the most part, like, yeah, it was just this passion for the show. I say it's like happenstance, kind of. It was a lot of different circumstances aligning at the same time to create like the perfect storm, which then started in 2017 and has continued every week since then. So that's like the Cliff Notes version of it.
Yeah, well, like, so I think a lot of people, obviously, especially listening to this podcast, can relate to, you know, the journey of finding Survivor, Big Brother, kind of like falling in love with it or whatever, maybe falling in hate with it, you know, whatever it is. But what made you go from just enjoying the show to making videos about it? Were you somebody that made videos before? Like where did it come from?
Yeah. I grew up in school loving to write. That was like my big thing. I wasn't so big on math or any of the, like writing was my thing. And I always enjoyed writing. And so when I got in got involved in Survivor, was loving it. It became a hobby. I enjoyed starting to like write about it and get involved in like the fan forums. And I eventually started writing long form thoughts and analysis to communicate with groups of people who are also fans. And that eventually I got so into it, I started like a little like WordPress blog where I would just sort of chronicle my thoughts on the episodes and other stuff too. I wasn't just writing about Survivor, but that was one thing I was consistently writing about because it was always on. And eventually that led into like, I became more fascinated in the edit of the show and trying to like crack down on like the clues and the narratives and the foreshadowing and all the storytelling bits that come into like editing this reality game and trying to find the winner too. I thought that was really cool, being able to like find the killer in the first chapter or the winner in the first episode or something. I thought that was just like a fascinating game within a game. And now we have Jeff hyping up the game within a game within a game, but you know, and that led to, I started a website based on my analysis to better like organize my data and my thoughts on everything. And it was also like flashier. I thought it'd be easier for other people if they wanted to. And it starts with just me being a huge fan, wanting to share my thoughts, collect all this information. I don't know. Like, I'm really like, I have a lot of, I keep things to myself. I'm more introverted. I'm more of a wallflower than anything, I think, for the most part. But I also can have really, really strong opinions on a select few things that I really enjoy. And I had accrued up to this point about 8 years of opinions on these very niche specific subjects of Survivor, Big Brother, these reality game shows. And I was like, how do I like talk, like listening to Rob talk every week and all these other people involved? I'm like, I don't know if I can fully get on a podcast like what we're doing here. And like, cause I'd never done that, but I'm like, but I can write and I know how to write and I have a strong writing voice. I always know that. I've always been told that and I just believe it. And I love to write. So it turned into a website. And then really like the perfect storm of it was that I ended up getting my master's in broadcast journalism, which if you haven't ever done broadcast journalism, like 75% of the course was just video editing. Mm-hmm. So like 25% of that was filming and then going back into the editing suite. And then the rest of it was just spent editing, learning how to take all the stuff we shot, putting it into a package for either radio or TV or for the news. And so I learned how to edit and I had that skill in mind. I was also somewhat in college interested in acting. I enjoyed the idea of like walking in someone else's shoes and trying to like somehow get into that mindset. I found that very captivating, to be honest. Like that really drove me. I don't know where that stems from, but I enjoyed it. And there was this idea of performing, but also combining my skill of writing with editing, my knowledge of editing, learning how to edit, and then my passion for Survivor. And also there was nobody doing it on YouTube. And I've been watching YouTube videos on and off for a long time. And I've been listening to other channels who talk about other video subjects that are like sort of what I cover, but not for Survivor, for movies or TV or video games or whatever you want to talk about. And I was like, nobody's really doing this for Survivor, but there's like 35 seasons at that point. There's a lot of content. And same thing with Big Brother. There was, I think, 18, 19 seasons. I'm like, there's a lot of content, but we only really get like compilation videos, you know, like nobody's really covering the show in this small, like 15 minute, like hyper-focused subject matter of a video where people sit down, analyze, compile data, draw conclusions, and then make like a somewhat entertaining video about it for 10 or 15 minutes. There's a lot of podcasts and I love the podcast, but I was like, nobody's really doing it on YouTube. And this was back in 2016. And so I was just like, maybe I could do that. Maybe it's not possible. I mean, that's why nobody's done it. Maybe like there's no audience for it. Maybe there's CBS like squashes down it right away. I don't know. But eventually I just said, you know, I'm going to go for it and just see what can happen from it. And it took off. So that was a long form answer.
No, that's what we're here for. It's cause it's funny. Cause I remember, like shortly after I started doing the podcast, talking to Rob, I had gone to LA with Rob to see Rob for the first time in person, and Like I was full of ideas back then about like different things that we could do and different things that we could try. And I had brought up like, you know, like those, like video essays for, cause at the time, like every frame of painting was, yeah. That was what it was called, yeah. Right?
Every frame of painting.
Yeah. Yes. I loved that channel. The guy's doing other things now. It's not as good. I really loved that channel. I was like, I bet like something like that could be done for Big Brother, but like I never had like, the time, like as a live feed person, like, you know, just doing the live feed updates all the time. And also like, I was like, I was a video editor and that was what I did for a living, but I was like, I don't want to have to go through footage and like I'm used to just talking about things. Like that's way too much work. But I remember thinking like that would be so cool if somebody did that. And then it was a while later that I started, you know, people started, oh, have you checked out this guy Peridium? And I was like, oh, that sounds like the thing that I felt like that, like this could be awesome. And it exactly was. And like you perfectly, I think, you know, encapsulate what kind of analysis people are looking for in these shows, in your videos. And, you do like a much better job than I think I am envisioned, right? Like, I think it's so cool that like you saw that, that opening and, you know, you just took it.
Yeah. I appreciate the compliments. I did wonder, I was like, when did you start getting into live feed updates, by the way? Do you place that?
2015.
2015. Okay.
Yeah. And I think it was around 2016 that I had that conversation with Rob. So it was, it's very funny that it was like right around the same time.
Yeah. For me, it was between, so I can oftentimes, cause I'm such a survivor of that, I can date my life based on like what season it was on air or Big Brother. And so it was between season 32 and 33, Ko-Rong, Millennials, Gen X. And I remember that summer being like, summer of 2016 being like, you know, I think I have this idea. It's always happens. Like I'm married, I have a wife. Whenever she's from the UK and she occasionally will travel abroad and spend a week or two back home with her family. It was harder for me at the time to go do that, take a couple weeks off, and go abroad, but she would go. And whenever she leaves me alone, that's when I start to like think up crazy ideas or I start to get in my own head. I have a lot of free time to like not pay attention to anything else and just sort of sit in my room. And that's when I came up with this idea of like, what if I moved from like this website, which was so time consuming to run? Like I didn't realize I jumped into building my own website and I had a functioning website, but, and this was back in 2015, 2016, but I was like, wow, this is so time consuming and there's just very little payoff. And like, I'm a big fan. I want to be able to make it regardless of the payoff, but also, like on some hand, it's nice to have your time be compensated a little bit. And you know, I never envisioned at the time that I'd be doing it full time, that I'd be doing this every day, year in and year out, week in and week out. But yeah, it started then in 2016, had this idea. And the funny thing is I actually did start a different YouTube channel before I started Peridium. And I actually had a couple of Survivor videos and I had one Survivor, one Big Brother video. And those were the first ones on that channel. I still have them. I've never shared them with anyone. It's me in front of the camera talking instead of the narrating over footage, which I thought was more like copyright safe. And it's also like, I kind of, when I first jumped into YouTube was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know exactly how to do any of this stuff. I wasn't really big on social media. I didn't have much of a concept of like what I was doing at the time. And I ended up deciding to position whatever the brand or whatever you want to call it, about me first instead of Survivor Big Brother. Cause I thought if I can grow an audience or have an audience, or I don't even know what I was thinking. This is 6 years ago, but like, if I could find something that's more me, people will follow me no matter what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But I realized really quickly, it took me less than 6 months to find out that I didn't care to talk about myself.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I just got really bored of forcing and trying to find ways to make myself more interesting than I was. Yeah. I just I'm forcing it. It's like, sometimes something's interesting, but that doesn't mean I have to share it. And even if I did, like, I don't know, it was weird. My wife was kind of like, what are you doing? Like, I'm like, yeah, I don't know what I'm, this is really embarrassing. Like filming myself doing things. I don't know. It was just weird. And so, I started with the Survivor Big Brother videos. Those were the very first two on that channel. And those were two of the best videos performance wise. I took the channel down and I came back to it a year later. And that was like, you know what? I think my first idea was the better idea of the bunch. And that's what ended up getting me to jump back into Survivor Big Brother and go with that. And I just said, all right, here we go. Like, I'm passionate. I think this can work. And it has so far. I said every single week I'm going to release a new video, and I have, and I've stuck to it. And I appreciate, again, I say a pull from Rob is a huge source of inspiration. Was like, if you can consistently just produce content and you enjoying it and it doesn't feel like you're forcing it and you, it, and it's worth some quality, some value. I'm like, that is so impressive to me. I want to be able to do that. And so far, 4.5 years later, I haven't missed a week. So I'm happy with it. I'm really glad that I went with it back then, and I'm happy to be here today. So yeah.
Well, it's funny you talk about like not wanting to have to try to be interesting. Like, that's always been my thing too. It's just like,
yeah.
Some people have maybe found it weird, but like, I don't really outside of this podcast where I'm opening up more to people. I don't really talk too much about like myself, and like I tried to like, you know, it's like people are not here for me. And some people I know, some, and when I say that now, they're like, when I'm on Twitch or something, like, well, okay, if you're on Twitch, you're probably there for me. But like, the reality is, despite the protests, people are not really here for me. They're here for the content, the Big Brother, the analysis, all of it. Right. And I've always sort of like, been cognizant of that. And, it's a very different thing to be talking about, like yourself or trying to make yourself interesting. And I also feel like Big Brother, it's limited in the sense that, you know, Big Brother or Survivor, you can talk about that, but there are so many different ways that you can talk about these shows. So many different aspects between the competitions, all of the different social dynamics, how they relate to society and societal dynamics and gender dynamics and, you know, racial dynamics and all kinds of different things that come from the show that are real. And then there's also tons of goofy, dumb stuff that happens in the show as well. And so there's so much you can talk about in that scope of things. I feel like when you try to talk about yourself, it's like, you're only one person. Like, it only goes so far, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I would say, like, it's crazy how many ways I've been able to slice. Like, if you told me 5 years ago, I would be running on 250, 300 videos about two shows. I'm like, what am I even talking about at that point? But I'm going to be honest, like 2021 was the best year for my channel, year 4 out of 5 so far. Now I'm in year 5 of this, and I still have so many ideas to get to that, like, I haven't even covered that much about the social dynamics, the social issues, at least, or the problems that come about. I haven't even dived into any of that. I don't know if I ever will or when I will, but still I created, before I ever made my first video, a long list, a master list of topics to cover. And honestly, even today, I don't think I've even gotten through half of them, just because I've kept adding so many new ideas and new concepts, and new fun. Sometimes they're stupid. Sometimes I made a video, I spent a whole week ranking the pizza on Survivor because it was April Fool's Day, and why not, you know? And you know, it was funny. It's honestly one of my favorite videos, but at the same time, it's wild. Like, it's interesting. I realized really quickly from the data I was finding, like, people do want to support the content, but they're also like not that interested in the person that much. Some are, definitely some are. And I really do appreciate those people, just because it's more personal. But yeah, they're there for, like, I don't want to like lose the plot. You know, they're here for Survivor Big Brother. I started because I'm here for, I remember one of the first comments I ever got on my previous channel was like, when I was talking about myself, somebody left this comment being like, Like you're funny, whatever, nice compliments, but like you're ultimately, you don't really have a niche and you're just like one person in a sea of millions out there doing the same thing. So like, I don't know if you're going to ever like break out of it. And I'm like, oh, that's unfortunate. Like I was just a couple of videos into my channel. So I was like, oh, that's discouraging, but also like kind of true. And the one thing I knew I had was this deep passion and coverage and analysis of these shows. And I thought, God, I think that's the angle I need to stick to. And whatever personality or individuality of who I am comes out through it in the cracks in between the videos or on social media, like I'll let that come through because that's mm-hmm. ultimately like what I'm doing and why I'm on social media in the first place. I'm not really here to talk about me very often. And I usually don't, I almost never talk about, I don't post pictures about me, videos. And I know that it could do well, and I could maybe do something with that, but I'm like, I don't know. It's just not really what I'm into. I don't know. It's weird.
No. Yeah, it is. And like, you're right that like, it can be successful at times to, cause like, I don't really post pictures. I've tried Instagram so much and like, you know, that's the thing, like you do it. And, but like, for me, it's like, it's just not natural for me to do. Like, it's not part of who I am. And so even though I do sometimes try, it's just like I can't be consistent with it because like the kind of job that we do is this weird thing where it has to come from a place of passion within yourself, and it also has to resonate with enough people for it to be successful. And so you have to find the Venn diagram where those things intersect. And yeah. So even if people are looking for more personal content, which most of the time they aren't, but even if they are, if you're just not somebody that is like, yeah, that's me, you're not going to be able to be consistent with it enough for it to be successful or anything. You know, like I would, and one third of all my Instagram photos are pictures of my cat, because if I was just posting what I would naturally, you know, take pictures of, it would just all be of my cat. And you know, that's great, but not enough people, would be into, like some people would be, but not nearly enough for that to be worth spending time on.
yeah, pretty much. I'm in the same boat. I do remember on Instagram, it was years ago. I remember you posting pictures and I was like, I kind of felt the same way. I'm like, I can't post pictures of myself because I can't get through. I don't know. Like, and there's that whole, I don't know if people are really, they're not really here for that. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a consistent feature. And I thought one thing is consistent is I make YouTube thumbnails. I'm just going to post those to Instagram.
Yeah.
Just to acknowledge that it's a platform that exists and I know people have to be on it. And I'm like, I guess for the 0.01% of people who come from Instagram, I'll update them. I'll let them know a new video is out. But for the most part, it's just not my territory. I did recently create a TikTok and I have zero intention of ever putting myself on it, but I mm-hmm. will post snippets of my videos. Yeah. If it means I can make a few pennies, for the TikTok crowd out there, I guess, is just wild. But ultimately, yeah, I'm a part of it. And for sure, I'm like, I need to make it so that I knew from the very beginning, like when I'm making the videos, I need to inject myself in as much as possible in the sense that I'm like still talking about the shows, but this is something that you can't get anywhere else, I guess. I was like, I want to make sure that this is Pridium's channel, Pridium's analysis, mm-hmm. my commentary, my like dumb sense of humor or whatever. And you're not going to find that anywhere else on the internet. So that's like where my personality comes out a little bit. My weird observations or my dumb jokes or my bad delivery or whatever you want to say, you know, and I'm like, that's the humanity of who I am behind the scenes, even though you don't really see my face or anything. So yeah, I don't know, but that's like me, as far as the brand goes with the chest piece and the word Pridium slashed over it. That's Pridium for the most part.
It's great. It's great branding. I feel like it's a great logo because it really says, I mean the chess piece obviously, but like it also just like it says something about the channel, that it is about analysis and that you're looking at things. Yeah. But then also like it's then you go to the channel, it's not like dry, like, you know, whatever. Right. It's like it's also fun. And so I feel like it's a good blend.
It was a little bit tongue in cheek, to be honest, because like I'm not that great of a chess player.
Yeah.
I've had people reach out to me and be like, oh, you played, like, do you want to play or whatever? And I'm like, you would clobber me and it would be embarrassing. And to be fair, that's probably fair. Like, that's true. Like, I'm not a good chess player. And that was the point of the logo itself, was tongue in cheek. I always thought of, like, in Survivor Cambodia, Spencer had this confessional where he's like, people aren't chess pieces. You don't win Survivor by viewing people as inanimate objects. And I thought that's so true. And then he went on to lose, partially because I guess he, I don't know, couldn't fulfill that. But I always thought it was an interesting concept. And then there's obviously the queen chess piece is the biggest piece on the board, the strongest piece. And I, you know, like the word queen is thrown out a lot in the fandom online. And this is 5 years ago. So I said, you know, let's do the queen chess piece as the logo. And then the word Peridium, I get this asked all the time. And do you know where the word Peridium came from? I think I might have told
I
you.
Believe you've told me before, but I don't remember. I feel like if you start saying it, I'll be like, oh yeah, that makes
yeah, it was a combination of my wife's birthstone and my birthstone. Mm-hmm. So Peridot and Diamond. And she was born in August. I was born in April. And boom, there you go. Just or Diadot could be all the opposite version of me, I guess. But yeah, Peridium.
the dark version.
I jokingly thought about that. Like an alt channel. It's like a weird combination of the two words. But yeah. So, but I mean, it's a weird thing to be doing. And on some level, I still don't fully believe that I'm doing this every week. It's a strange phenomena. I enjoy it every day. I will say, like, I do occasionally think, like, one day I'm going to look back and be like, God, those were such great days in my life that I don't have anymore, because now I'm working a different job that I don't enjoy as much or something. Mm-hmm. I just say, like, of all the jobs I've ever had in my life, and I've had a lot, like, this one is by far my favorite. I love the idea of having full agency and autonomy of my day and being able to be in control, like, being able to do whatever I want to do and need to do to make sure that I'm ahead, that I'm thriving. If I put in more time and effort, and I know that it can work out, and I don't know. I'm really happy being able to do this. So I do worry that, like, you know, one day this will be the glory days, the golden days of life. I don't think so, because I want to believe that there's more out there. There's better things to come. I don't even know if this is a temporary thing, or like, will this be social media creation content, creating content for the rest of my life? I don't know what's going to look like, you know, a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. The further we get, the less I have any concept of where I'm going exactly with this. So
yeah,
sort of flying by the seat of my pants.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, so how did it grow, right? Because you know, as you know, like, anybody can just start making videos, but like, when did it get to a point? Like, you said you wanted to commit to making one a week. Did you have a notion that it would be anything beyond just like a fun project? And if so, like, or if not, like, when did it change?
I remember when I first got into it, I didn't know what was capable, or what, like, if I was even ever going to have a video using the footage. Like, when I first made the videos, I used only my face, and I'm like, there's no way that's going to be a problem. But jumping into it, I was like, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to get one video up, let alone more than that. So I remember the first time I got a copyright claim, I was mortified. I remember literally where I was, like, the time of day. It was just like, I remember reading that and being like, my channel's over. We had a good run. Like, I got a copyright claim. The video got blocked. I'm like, there's no reason why this won't happen ever again. And that was just ultimately me learning the ropes of how copyright claims work, and that CBS doesn't really care. Actually, they're actually more friendly than anything to my channel, I think. Although I've never spoken to any of them, but the growth was just, I wanted to be consistent. I have seen other people in the past run social media. Like, people may not know this, my brother's on social media. He's been around for 10 years. He's grown quite well, but then he also has made some huge errors in his career as a social media person. He grew, he had over 1 million subscribers on YouTube. He had a very legitimate channel. He was making killer bank for good 5 years. And then it sort of all came collapsing down. He's kind of reckless. He's like, he's a musician and he very much lives and dies by that. Like that's his dream. And so watching him do it, I sort of took pointers from like what I thought he wasn't doing right when I started doing mine. And he didn't help me in any way other than maybe just putting it on my radar of a thing that's possible because most people don't really understand social media or like what it takes to do it every day or grow a channel. Like it, I wouldn't say it's like hard labor, but it's definitely hard. It takes a lot of time. Like I've never spent more time in my life doing any one thing than running social media accounts day in and day out. It's not stressful in a sense, but like, it's very much like wearing a blindfold and you just don't, I don't fully know exactly. And there's so much information, so many ways you can cut everything and go about it and analyze and draw conclusions from what's working, what isn't working. And then I don't know. Like I also like try to make it, I try to put so much passion and care into like the edit that I snip together and the thumbnails. It just takes a lot of time, but I saw my brother making mistakes. And I saw other people making mistakes and I thought one thing I want to do is be consistent at the very least, have same update, same upload day, same roughly same time. I decided that the day of the show is going to air. I'm going to air right before it, the afternoon. So you can kind of watch my video and then watch the episode. That would be like a fun like appetizer to the main meal. And I've still stuck to that schedule. I still upload on Wednesday afternoons right before the Survivor episode on Wednesday night or Thursday afternoon before the Big Brother eviction. And I think that was like a key thing. I saw Rob doing it every week, uploading. I mean, he still does it like crazy. I feel bad. I more often delete the emails I get from his Patreon than I do end up clicking on them because there's just so many.
Yeah.
And that's I admire it. I'm like, gosh, I could only dream to have that many, like that much content going out, I guess. But nonetheless, either way, it is what it is. He's killing it. But I just consistency was one thing and. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like going off the rails with that answer. I just sort of went in so many directions.
Well, no, well, like so you started putting content out. Like, you know, what was the initial kind of, you know, response, viewership, and like when did that start to shift for you?
Initial response was positive. I took my first two videos, posted them on Reddit, Twitter, but I didn't really have an audience for that. People enjoyed it. It was small. I still have screenshots when my first video had less than 1,000 views and I was working on the second one, just cataloging what that was like. I didn't know what was possible. It started just as a passion project and it's remained a passion project, but I didn't go into it thinking this is going to eventually be my full-time job. This is something I'm going to be able to make money doing it in any capacity. I thought maybe like it's not out of the realm of possibility, but I didn't know. I'd never made a dollar on social media, on my own content like that before. So on YouTube of all places. So when I first started doing it, I didn't know like where it was going to go, what was possible. I didn't think that I'd be here today doing what I'm doing in any capacity. And I eventually go full time, at the end of 2020, December 31st, January 1st of 2021. So even then I didn't make a single dollar on my YouTube channel for about a year making videos. And I didn't go full time until 3.5 years into making videos. So I've only been doing this for a little over a year now, full time. So yeah, I don't know. There's a lot.
Well, what went into that decision? Like, when did you start thinking maybe this can be a full time thing?
I think it was when I started hating my day job. Like I got really sick of it, working 9 to 5, really dealing with the upper management, finding it very, I've always had growing up, I've noticed like I always put pressure on my leaders or my bosses to do a good job of managing. And I always find them coming up short for whatever reason. I don't think I have an issue with authority. It's just, I've always found them, it's just lack. And I find it somewhat incompetent. Like they can't juggle all the balls that they're throwing up in the air. I'm like, that's your job. Like you're my manager. I don't feel like you're doing it. And so I just got really frustrated and it was an increasing thing for me. Like what the biggest catalyst was just getting, incredibly frustrated with my boss at the time in 2020. And also the job I had was trying to pivot with COVID coming into place. I worked from home before COVID. So for me, the adjustment wasn't difficult. I had already worked from home, which I think was also another huge like enabler of being able to make this content in the first place, was I was already at home. And so in the cracks of my day, I would occasionally start analyzing an episode of Survivor or whatever. And I would put that on the side. I was able to mesh them together. But the biggest thing for me to take the jump was like, I was doing financially successful enough on YouTube in 2020 where I felt like, all right, I do think there's a future. I think I can dump the like sandbags off, or take the backpack off that's weighing me down and do a full on sprint. With the social media creation, content creation that I had at that time. And, you know, 2021, I said, was the best year of my channel. And that was when I first started doing it full time. So I feel like something was working. My wife got me a picture in the background that you can't really see. It's sort of fuzzy, but it's Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec. And it said, she got me this right as I was strongly, I spent months deliberating what I should do, because leaving your day job and getting rid of that financial security, like I don't have benefits. I use her benefits now, but we used mine at the time. Like that's a lot. I'd never done that before in my life, but she got me this picture that I still have. And it's right next to my YouTube plaque that YouTube sent me. And honestly, it's more important than that. And it was just simply don't, it says, never half-ass two things, whole ass one thing. And that was basically the logic that went into ultimately making the transition, was like, I am basically half-assing two things in a way, even though I felt like I was putting in a lot of time into my channel throughout those 3.5 years. But now I'm full on, fully dedicated. So I think that was the biggest thing that got me realizing like this can work. It was seeing the metrics work in my favor over the years, seeing the interest, even in spite of like many other content creators popped up in 2020 because of Winners at War. And I'm like, I'm still doing really well. I'm doing better even. And I'm like, I was worried that for a while, one of the biggest problems was I was just the first, but I wasn't that great. Because there's no competition. There's nobody who's doing anything similar to what I'm doing. So maybe it's not that I'm good. It's just that I'm the only one there. And there is still that doubt sometimes. Like, is this actually good, or is it just like it's just people are used to it? I don't know. I'm like, there's a quality versus like people are just used to hearing my voice, so they come back. I'll never know, and I just have to run with confidence, believing, hoping for the best. And there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I think like if anything can qualify as good, then like, you know, what you're doing is right. Like, I'm like there. Because I remember like you were definitely, you know, the first that I heard of. But you know, even like a long time ago, I know there were other people that were also trying similar things. That like, I don't know. I still haven't heard of, I still haven't heard of anybody other than you, really. I know that there are other people doing stuff. But you're the one that really rose to the top in terms of, you know, just the consistency and the quality of your content. And, you know, even if people are, you know, used to you now, if anything, like, I feel like, you know, like basically in the content creation realm, it's, it goes one of two ways. It's either like somebody's really good and they stand the test of time, and people stick with them and they continue to grow, or it's like everybody hops to the next new thing because they get bored of the old one, right? And so, I mean, I think that you, the fact that you're still growing is a very good thing and an indication that you are doing good work. The fact that you're still passionate about it and you still have so many ideas, I personally wouldn't be worried for you that like you're not doing it. That you're that like, oh, it's just because people are used to me. Like, you know, if people are used to you, sometimes that means they get bored and they just leave. You know, something has to get them to come back every single week, right? So you're doing something right.
I think there was a certain also, like, I had been involved in the Survivor Big Brother community for 8 years before I started doing this, like consistently week in and week out. So I kind of knew, based on just like my own observations, that there's a lot of like passion. There's a big community, or somewhat big community, big enough to sustain it. And like, if there isn't, well, hey, it was fun. I did it for a year, whatever. Like, it is what it is. And I just made some videos. And if there is something big, like even better, because I can, if there's something there that I can tap into and consistently work on over the years, I'm like, that's also hope. Like, I hope for the best. But if there isn't, like, no loss. Like, the first year I didn't make any money anyway. And I was there strictly just because I was like, you know, maybe this is a fun avenue to explore making content. But I had this idea, like there's a huge following of Survivor fans, Big Brother fans. I've been in it for 8 years before I made that. I think it'll hold up. I think there's an interest. I'm going to just test the waters and then see where it takes me. And there is, and there still is, you know, 42 seasons, even despite the naysayers pop up every year, people doubting the show is consistent. I'm like, people have been doing that since like All Stars 1, like in 2004. Mm-hmm. Like it's just noise. I don't know. All good things can't last forever. Maybe it'll collapse in on itself. At some point it'll go away and who knows, but that's definitely like that's the cataclysmic meteor that I don't like to acknowledge of like what happens when the show eventually is over.
Yeah.
You know, I know where it started. I was there, but you know, does the journey Yellow Brick Road eventually ends? And I don't know what that looks like, but either way,
it is very strange to have, what is essentially your entire career rest on the work of other people.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the little fish attached to the big shark.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I just owned that role, and I'm like comfortably just that's me. There's more to me than that. I'm not just that little fish. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to you know what I do every day in and day out, that's where I'm at. Yeah, it's a strange concept. I don't know. I imagine there's a lot of people out there who are in similar situations. Mm-hmm. People I see who create content strictly about a few stuff and. I mean, on some level, maybe you're in a similar boat. I don't know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's okay. I'm one of those. I'm right there with you. That's what I was like from the same exact perspective. That's the thing is like if you think about it, it's not really that unique, right? Like no. A lot of people, also like if you work for a company, you work in that company, but you don't really have control over how well the company's doing, and ultimately the company could fail, and you could lose that job too. Yep. So. I try to think of it that way where it's like, it's not actually that weird or scary. Right.
I mean, my wife's company she works for a company that just got bought out by another one. Yep. And that's very like, it's very normal. It's just a very regular process that happens. Companies absorb each other. Things change dramatically. Sometimes on a dime, sometimes you get an email and you're like, oh, we go by a new name now. Oh, we have a whole new company name and a whole new boss and blah, blah, blah. What does this mean? Benefits change. It's, you know, positions change. It's not too dissimilar. It's just a slightly unique that it's like, it's a more of a 21st century version of it, I guess.
Yeah. But I mean, that's how I started podcasting is the company I worked for got bought out and then they shut it down. It's like, all right.
Yep.
On to something else.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So.
So you've been putting out content consistently for a long time, every week. Like, what is your process? Do you make a video every week or do you make as many videos as you can, as often as you can, and then you bank them up? Like how do you keep consistent?
So before I made my channel, I made 400 videos and I've just been coasting for 5 years.
That's the dream, right?
All right. I mean, that's sort of something that I adopted last year, which is like, wait a minute. If I work really hard, I could theoretically, like, if assuming everything works out week to week, I could like sort of just chill for like the summer. That isn't really how it goes. Unfortunately, it's a little bit more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Initially it was literally like day to day. Like I was scrambling for weeks, for years, yeah. Every single week I post the video on Wednesday. I was working late Tuesday night into the night to guarantee everything was good to go. And like, copyright claim checks are another fear. The sooner you can get the video up on YouTube, the sooner you can give it a time to like soak in with the algorithm so that the copyright ID system doesn't like, if it flags it, it either block it or at least demonetize it. And you don't want either of those things, least of all blocking, but demonetizing sucks too, especially when you're doing it for a living. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, in order to be on top of this more, you definitely need to get the content out sooner or make it sooner. Because it's like, there's more on the line now than there was at the beginning of my channel's lifespan where it was just like video blocked. That really, like, I really hated that. Mm-hmm. That was like a good week's worth of my time. Just they snap their fingers and, nobody gets to see it. It's like nothing ever happened. And there's not much I can really do about it other than, a year later, re-edit it and re-release it, which I've done now with all the ones that got blocked. Mm-hmm. just reintroduce it as updated content with like new information that has been gleaned in the last year or so, and new takes. But like most of the span of my channel, it was simply create the video once a week, release it, episode goes out that night, new Survivor episode, let's say. And I would get the idea for the next video from that episode. So I would take like the most relevant topic of that episode and create like a bigger idea out of it. Like if a crazy moment happened, where can I look at all the moments like that were similar in the history of the show? And I can't believe that I did that for so long, because that is like the last minute 11th hour planning. And I managed to do it for a while. I'm like, now I would never even think about doing that. At some point, I think it was around 2019, 2020, I started fleshing out like months worth of content. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe also part of when I started taking it a little bit more seriously. It wasn't just a fun passion project. It was like, this could be a real thing if I really sit down and like iron out like a strategy and a plan, and I plan out months ahead of the time. And so like for 2020 with All Stars, Big Brother All Stars 2, I actually did do what I said. I made 3 months worth of content ahead of time, and I literally took a whole month off and I just chilled. I watched the feeds like crazy. I was just engaged with the community, and I was just doing other stuff on the side. Did a little bit of traveling and stuff, but I'm like, wow, that was really interesting. I spent all of April, May, and June just crunching day in and day out, like staying up late every single night, 7 days a week, making sure that I had all these ideas. I did all the research. I took all the notes. I recorded the videos. I created like this giant list of, I have a key that I still use to this day that is color coded based on, how far along every video I have is. So it's like the video is either white, it's just an idea. Red is being researched. Orange, it's the script has been written. Yellow, audio is recorded. Blue, audio is edited. Purple, video is edited. Or green, video is complete, including the thumbnail. And I have a color-coded rainbow right now that I'm looking at with all the way up until the end of May of just different. I've got 3 videos I'm about to have done. 3 more videos I've already written the script for, which is like the most difficult hurdle of the entire process, I'd say, is the script writing. Like the research takes a long time. The video editing takes a long time, but the script writing is when I have like this moment sigh of like, okay, we're over the hump of like the content. Yeah. We've got the research. I've managed to break it down into layman's terms. I've been able to produce it in a way that's like entertaining, or it's like a 2,000, 3,000 word paper. I can narrate it. Just got to like sort of go on autopilot now for the next 12, 15 hours of content and creating the content. Whereas before that, it's very active. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. There's a lot that goes into it. I could dive into like the whole content creation process for a while, but it started out week to week, literally day to day. Like, oh, we get a new idea with the latest episode. And I'm like, this is really bad planning.
Yeah.
And then it turned into like months worth of planning. And that's where I'm at now. So, and I think that's way better for my sanity. And I think for the content as well. It allows me to also improvise if I need to, because I don't know, I can move things around, slot them in and out of weeks. And I'm like, all right, this video is likely going to happen at the merge episode. And I'm going to make a video about the merge or something relevant to merge. And but then it's not the merge. They all of a sudden do the hourglass twist and I'm like, oh shit, the merge episode isn't actually happening this week. Mm. Okay. Let's do something different. Switch it around. I don't know. So
it makes sense.
Yeah.
So what had you been doing before, all of this?
I worked as a marketer for an online data company, which is just the most boring thing to talk about. It is dry, but data incredibly relevant. But man, is it boring to talk about to people who aren't in the data. And it was B2B, which is even less interesting because B2B is business to business as opposed to B2C, business to consumer. Mm-hmm. So like most companies you see are B2C, but then B2B are like the company I worked for fueled the data to the companies that are trying to market to you. So we're like the guys in the background, and we weren't even the ones collecting the data. We just simply organized it, bundled it, and like we were the middleman between like Microsoft and like data collection companies out there who would actually mine for your data on like those forms that you fill out that you have to sign and give away all your life information and stuff. And I was just marketing it. I was in marketing at the time. It was a basic job. It wasn't terribly exciting before that. So actually, I mean, to get into the real interesting stuff before that, I after I graduated college, I had never really traveled much in my life, never been abroad. Went to Canada once, to Halifax. I was really young. The best part about that was like I got taken on a cruise and I just loved eating like free ice cream.
Yeah.
Like, that was my biggest thing. I remember that more than anything else. Mm. I'm like, I graduated college. I had never traveled. I wanted to do something different. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life at the time. And I had my degree, my bachelor's degree. I just said, you know what? I think I'm going to try to do something cheap that allows me to travel and just live elsewhere. I was really fixated, like similar to acting, on this idea of living in another person's shoes. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? If I wasn't born on the East Coast of the United States and grew up here, like what would that look like? Like what would it look like if I was born in the random, some other country somewhere and live that life, even though I'll never fully know, I'll always be like this East Coast American kid, but like maybe I could go do something else for a little bit. I ended up moving to the Czech Republic.
Wow.
Just random.
It was completely random. There wasn't any reason.
I blindsided my whole family. Nobody encouraged me. My family is not a group of travelers. We went to the beach for vacation nearby, like Ocean City, Maryland and stuff, Bethany Beach. Occasionally go to Duck, North Carolina, the Outer Banks. But yeah, nobody encouraged me to do it. I just said, like, I'm interested in just seeing what else is out there. I like where I'm at. It's comfortable, whatever, but like, I'm more interested. I was in my early 20s. I'm way more interested in just living different experiences that I couldn't even think of off the top of my head, like going bungee jumping in the Czech Republic. Or
why the Czech Republic?
The Czech Republic wasn't necessarily like the target. Like I could have thrown a dart at the board. Mm-hmm. I was mostly trying to find a way, like, all right, I need to be able to make a little bit of money while also doing this. So I ended up doing a lot of program searching for places to potentially like say teach English as a language or something basic like that. And initially I was going to go to Japan, even though I didn't have any particular interest, which I think is partially what got me to not go to Japan. There was this program called the JET program, which pays pretty well considering what you do. You're like a backup assistant teacher, English teacher in a Japanese school. They paid you like $60K in US dollars to do that. I was like, that's pretty good considering I didn't know what I was up to. This was almost 10 years ago. So I found a course online through a random blog and they went to the Czech Republic through this course called Oxford TEFL. They were located in either Spain, Czech Republic, the UK, or India. And I was basically like, well, I'm not going to go to the UK because they already teach English. They know English, like that's their primary language. I don't know. It's like similar to the US. India, they're like, you can't live in India after you pass the course. You go to the course for about 5 weeks. You can't stay in India after you graduate from the course and get a certificate to teach English. So I'm like, well, I want to stay wherever I'm going to be spending those 5 weeks. And then it was between hot weather climate or cold weather climate. Mm. And I decided I'd prefer more of the cold weather at the time. Also, I grew up with a couple of like au pairs or babysitters when I was a kid, because I had a single mom. Mm-hmm. And my babysitters were all from the Czech Republic. This was in the early 90s when the Velvet Revolution was happening in the Czech Republic. They were escaping communist Russia. And so they illegally came to the US and babysat a couple of American kids. Mm. And I had that somewhat. And I actually got to meet a couple of them again 20 years later before I went to the Czech Republic. And they hadn't seen me in a long time. And I was all grown up and they gave me all these tips and pointers and like a list of like how to translate the Czech language when you get there. And so I ended up just picking there and I heard lots of beautiful things about Prague. Mm. And it is probably my favorite city in the world. So I would love to go back. I haven't been back in almost 10 years, but yeah, that was why Prague. That was why Czech Republic came up. It was this one particular course offered it and I just said, I'm going to do it. And then I ended up living there for a year. So what
happened? Did you like, was it a transformative experience?
Maybe it did. That was just one step of the way towards eventually. Like, I will say that was one of the best decisions I've ever made. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it transformed me because I was still me there. And I still remember me just being me from before, but in Prague now. So I was just kind of still the same kid who's a little quieter in the groups and hanging out and going around and just getting tugged left and right to go to these. I was in rave clubs in the middle of Prague and 3 in the morning. Like, what is happening? And it was an experience for sure. I don't know if I necessarily transformed or anything, but I did have a great time, and I would recommend it. I recommend it to all my family and cousins who would just, I think I got a better appreciation of like what it means to like be where you're from, like what it meant mm-hmm. to be from the East Coast. 'Cause that was the default for me.
Yeah.
So going and seeing, and I ended up getting into a large group of friends who were from the UK. They were from South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, and also from the Czech Republic and other countries in the area. But the English speaking group was from all over the world. And like, I just remember the first time I got on an airplane and it had like German all over. And I was like, I've never experienced this before. Like that was really fascinating. It really brought in, and then having the constant conversations about how English, American English is different from British English, is different from Australian English or South African English, or even how like learning about the Czech culture. I got to go to a couple of Czech weddings, and I would go teach business professionals in the middle of Prague. Like I ended up befriending, and I still am friends with him today, a journalist who worked for Forbes in Prague, and he was going to the World Cup. And he invited me to his wedding, and it was just like a really cool experience to just meet all these really interesting, really friendly people from this tiny country that has its own currency. And it's English. They're very an outdoorsy group of people. They're really kept to themselves, but they're super nice, super friendly. Can't say enough good things about living in Prague. So I think if anything, I just gained I definitely think that I gained a lot more sympathy and empathy and like a broader appeal of kindness to anyone, because mm-hmm. I was able to just meet so many different people and just learn to just like respect who I am and also who they are and the differences between all of us. And I don't know. Some of my favorite conversations are just talking about our differences and why it doesn't really matter. Like it's all gravy. So,
yeah.
Is that
where you met your wife?
It is. Yeah. She was doing a similar thing. She was in a different headspace at the time. So her mom had just passed away and she didn't know what she wanted to do with her life. So she came to Prague on the same course. Mm-hmm. Interestingly though, she came a month before me. So we actually didn't meet up right away. Mm-hmm. She was rooming with this American girl who was in my course and the same month. So she left, she went to Prague, did the course, thought it was okay, went back to the UK, found that she didn't know what to do in the UK when she got back. So she came back to Prague again, roomed with this American girl who was in my course. I was friends with her. I went over to my friend's house to hang out in Prague, and she was there. And the really bad story is that my friend had two roommates that were both, one was my wife, my future wife. The other one was this other American girl. And I ended up flirting with that girl first. And my wife knows this. And the one friend of mine was like, okay, I can tell you're interested in both of them. Like, I'm going to try and set you up. Like, who would you like to go on a date with first? And I didn't pick my wife. And it was so bad because I immediately realized this was a huge mistake. Once I got to know the first girl, I was like, oh, no. This is... And I just naturally, I remember just the first time realizing when I was talking to my wife now, I was talking to her for the first time in Prague in my friend's kitchen hangout space. And we were just talking by ourselves. And I was just like, this girl is so cool. Mm-hmm. This is a person I really get like instantly just from one conversation. And it's one of the only times I've ever had that effect, like just click. Mm-hmm. And so it just sort of stayed that way. And it literally hasn't, this was back in 2014. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 2013. So, I mean, we got married in 2015. We got married only after dating for a year and a half.
Wow.
And that was mostly because of visa issues, but mm-hmm. we're still together 7 years later and we're going to ride it out until the end. So,
yeah. Well, yeah. So how did that work? I guess you met her fairly early on into being into the Czech Republic, and then you were dating most of that year.
Yeah. We started dating, it was Friday the 13th of December, 2013. And, we met a couple months, we met around Halloween of that year, but we were at a bar with all the people going crazy. People in Czech Republic just drink so much that mm-hmm. and water is more expensive than beer there.
Yep.
At least it was.
Yep.
Yeah. It's more expensive than beer. So the beer is, and the Czechs pride themselves on their beer. Mm-hmm. So you can get pretty good beer, or I would say really good beer. They would hate me for saying pretty good, for very cheap. And there's lots of it to go around and they love to enjoy it. And I don't really remember meeting my wife. It was a Halloween party. I didn't remember meeting her at the time. That is, it was really ridiculous. I went dressed as Edward Snowden. Just to give you an idea of my personality, or that was my name tag. Yeah, I had a little thinner face then, but still, Edward Snowden. I wore the glasses. Hello, my name is Censored. Mm. I was living in the Czech Republic. This was a very, very topical costume, very timely costume. So, but yeah, I met her then, and a couple months later we were dating, and a year and a half later we were married. We ended up moving to the UK actually right after Prague.
Okay.
And that's where I got my master's degree. And so I was like, I wanted to do that, interestingly, before I met her. I was like, I think my next step is I want to pursue my further education, go deeper. And I was considering potentially just living in the UK. When I think about it, like, that definitely explains who I am even today. Like, I very much enjoy peace and solitude. Mm-hmm. I enjoy being the master of my own little domain, my own bubble, and just thriving in it. And so I think me wanting to move abroad and live abroad potentially forever was like, that was the first signs of it. And I moved to the UK with her and got my master's degree there. And we were going to live there as long as we could. It's just, it's expensive. And the pound is this is before Brexit, but the pound is worth a lot more. And also just the UK in general is harder to emigrate to than the US.
Yeah.
Just a lot harder. So we ended up doing the opposite and coming to the US with her. We didn't want to separate at all. And so we ended up getting married, and yeah, it's a lot.
It's a cool story.
It's fun. It's been so much fun. I've been hopping around. Like, my wife and I joke, we've never really lived too long in one place. We lived in Prague, the UK. We ended up moving to, this is so random, I don't think I've told anyone, we moved to Puerto Rico.
No.
Sandra Diaz Twine is from there. I didn't get to say hi to her, but I wish I could have. Maybe if I had a little more pull like I do today, I could have. But either way, you know, one of my all-time misses. I lived there for a little bit. I live in the East Coast now, back somewhat close to where I grew up. Moved house 2 years ago, right before COVID. And this is the longest I've stayed in one place. It's been since the end of 2019. So wow. I've been with my wife for 7 or 8 years now, and we've only lived in one place for 2 years. That's the longest we've ever spent. So it's crazy. But
do you think you're gonna stay in that area now? Have you come full circle, or is this just another step?
You know, it's funny, we were just having a conversation yesterday afternoon about, like, considering, like, do we ever go anywhere else? Like, maybe. I'm like, but where do we go? Like, I don't know for sure. I was listening to you talk to Tyson recently, and he's like, it's kind of crazy. You can just kind of, I know you filmed this months ago, but he was just saying, like, you can kind of just go wherever you want. If you really want it, like, you can like, at least, especially if you're podcasting and your job is more mobile, you can kind of just do it if you really want it. And, you know, he's like, we're going to Hawaii or Arizona. And I was like, yeah, I can kind of relate to that. And that's partially, I think, what got me thinking about it more. It was like, where I live, the crime rate is kind of getting higher. I live close to Baltimore, which is one of the biggest crime of any city in the country. So you hear about it a lot. I'm just kind of like, you know, I don't have to live here. I do have family in the area, and they have slowly started congregating more closer to us because we're here, which would feel bad, because if we moved, it would be like we were the first ones. And then my brother moved here, my sister moved to the area, my dad sort of moved to the area. So I'm like, oh, if we leave, that would be kind of, feel a little bit of guilt, but I don't know. At the end of the day, we'll see. We don't really have any strong, I always wanted to live on the West Coast, but I don't know. It's, I could see it, but I don't know if it'll happen anytime soon. So
you gotta try it.
I've enjoyed it. Every time I've gone to the West Coast, I've enjoyed myself. We recently went to Seattle. In fact, I was listening to you talk to Kevin Martin. I was in Calgary when he was filming or doing that podcast with you. I didn't know Kevin lived in Calgary. And he was talking about that. He was like, yeah, I'm in Calgary, it's freezing. And I'm like, wait, he says in Calgary? I'm like, oh my God, it is so cold here. Like, it was like minus 30. You walk outside and you slowly, like you said, you slowly start feeling like you're dying.
Yeah.
Like, I legitimately thought I could die here in Calgary if I don't pay attention to my body temperature.
Yeah, the health bar is getting low. You don't notice. No flashing red.
I'm like Zelda slowly losing a quarter of my heart. And I'm like not even realizing it. That was my experience in Calgary. It was cool. I loved it. Just interesting hearing you talk to Kevin about it. But yeah, I would love to go to California. I've always wanted to. I always joked growing up. It was so weird. When I worked at a part-time as a teenager, I would tell people, I would just created characters and I would tell people that I actually was originally from California.
Yeah.
Cause people thought that I gave off like a California vibe, like, bro, dude, we're going to like, oh yeah, I'm from Cali, but I live on the East Coast. Like, no, I've never even been to California in my life. I went to Europe before I went to California. But I always would tell people like, yeah, I went to California. I used to live there. I'm going to go back, go to UCLA or something. Just create little random character. It was weird. I was a strange teenager.
But. I think most people are strange teenagers. I think that's,
yeah.
I think teenagers are strange.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just, I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the experiment and, I mean, I don't know if I'm ever going to leave.
So, do you see yourself staying there for a while or is this just, I mean, how, so I've listened to your doing the Taran show from around New Year's, but I'm wondering now we've got 3 months later, is it still, I guess not much has changed in those 3 months?
No, I mean, it's just nice. I've gotten through the winter and, it's not like hot in the winter. I had to put on like a hoodie most of the time, but
sounds pretty
like,
good.
Yeah, that was it. And like, if, as long as there's sun, you're good. And there's usually sun. And so like, that was super nice just to like be able to exist. Like I didn't want to like necessarily like, in fact, I tried to go to the beach at one point and I was like, no, this is a little cold unless because it was a little too cloudy. And I was like, all right, I can't go to the beach in the winter all the time. But I did like spend Thanksgiving on the beach, which was nice. Just being able to just like exist in a state of not being uncomfortable is really nice. And I also just like I feel like the layout suits me. I don't know. I've just never like, you know, I lived in cities for a long time and, I didn't grow up in a city, but when I went to college and then I stayed in the city and, I feel like there's just not enough there for me. Like, I like bigger stores and movie theaters and like driving to places rather than, trying to cram into a small little, whatever in the city. I like having more space and there's a lot more space out here. It's weird. Cause like, I don't know when this will go away for me or if it ever will go away, but living here feels like I'm just permanently on vacation because there's like palm trees everywhere. And like, it's sunny. It's just like,
and so like I was in Puerto Rico and it's like constant nice.
Yeah.
Except
yeah.
for occasionally it gets a little too hot. I guess you haven't been there fully in the summer in San Diego yet.
Yeah. It can get a little like the sun feels more intense here. I don't know why, in the summer, especially though, like, it can get a little hot, but like not bad, especially if you're in a more coastal area here. Cause it's like being on the coast keeps it comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. I had the same effect. I was like, it kind of feels like I shouldn't, I don't know. I was just growing up on the East Coast. So you just kind of like suffer through the cold and you suffer through we had a tornado hit our area a couple months ago. I was literally in it like crazy enough, had to go in the median and drive the opposite direction. And I'm like, I never really got that living in nicer places in the world. I guess it just gets really hot sometimes and you get the beaches right there, which is really nice. I do think that I would ultimately enjoy probably living on the West Coast more, but oh well, that's what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not there. It's tough.
sometimes you just got to try it. How do you see it's your future? I mean, it sounds like you're looking at, do I want to stay here? Do I want to try other places? You also talked about the YouTube thing. Don't know how long it will last. So do you just kind of look at it like, I don't know, this is nice and we'll see how long it goes? Or are you kind of like looking for something more in the future?
I think it's mostly this is nice. Let's see how long we can write it out. But there is an element of like, I want to make sure that what I'm doing now, I learn as much. I try to generally learn something new every day or every week that I haven't known the previous week about what I do, because I spend so much time, I might as well just not post, but like try to improve in some little way, whether it's just a small little editing trick or something bigger. And so I do think I've been able to do that, because I do think if I were to do something more than this, I would probably jump into more of a video editing role beyond YouTube videos. I don't know what that looks like for sure, but I do know that I'm capable of doing what I do. And if I can run social media, I could do something else. I don't know for sure yet. But for the most part, like, it is, as long as Survivor's around, I'm going to be around. As long as Big Brother's around, I plan to be around. As long as like the CBS gods don't, you know, lay the band hammer on me and decide to get vicious or something, I don't ruffle too many feathers. They'll, you know, allow me to do this, I guess, which I think is happening. I think they're okay with everything. So,
I mean, they should be kind of the future. Like, you know, I feel like your kind of content, our kind of I mean, honestly, they should be more mad at me, because like a lot of people are like, oh, well, I can just watch the podcast and not watch the episodes. Whereas like with you,
I mean, like, I do that. I was like, I'm going to listen to just with Taryn or the live feed update or the latest roundtable to get my digest if I feel like it.
But like, with, I feel that. Like your content encourages people to get into the show and like why, and you know, I think the same is true of the podcast to some degree as well, but but like it's the kind of stuff that you talk about that makes me interested in the show in the first place. And I like the fact that your stuff exists, it's a great place to like point to people to be like, no, see, there's like, there's genuine interesting stuff to come from this show. And I feel it's a great thing for the show to have content like yours.
I mean, that's partially when I get those copyright claims, especially when they want to block me, I write up a paragraph and try to do my best to plead like how altruistic all this is. And it's good. We're all winners in the end.
Yeah.
You gotta trust me on this one, guys. I know your Survivor social media game is so bad. So is Big Brother's. I'm like, on one hand, I'm like, thank you, because you're making it look easy for me. But on the other hand, I'm like, guys, it's not like who you got running over there. Like, you can't, there's I can tap into it, and I do so well for the most part. And I'm like, you guys are just sitting on a gold mine, and you're just not doing anything with it. I don't know, but I get it. It's, you know, it is what it is. They seem to be fine. They make way more anyway doing what they're doing, so I'm not going to complain too much. But yeah, I'm like, look, I've had so many people reach out to me and say over the last 5 years, like, I got into these shows because of you. Or I found one of your videos and it encouraged me to like want to know more, because I didn't understand it all. And I went and I watched and I binged it. I've had like more people than you might think, even more people than I ever anticipated telling me. Like, they leave comments or they DM me just saying, thank you, thank you. And I'm like, that's really like, that's a huge boon to, like, sometimes you get negative comments or you get criticism, whether justified or not. And, you know, sometimes that overweighs the positivity of it all. But I'm like, that's so cool to see. Like, part of the reason I've done these hack videos, I've done 7 of them now, is because they do incredibly well. And they bring a lot of people to the show, or at least I like to think they bring a lot. I get a lot. That's the number one topic I get most people saying. They watch the video and they're like, I want to see more about what's going on. Like, I want to see the bigger context. So I don't know. I think like I'm not replacing the content anyway. This is like me basically pitching to CBS, like, please guys, like, I'm not replacing your content in literally any way. I hope maybe a handful of people would prefer to watch me over the episode, but I doubt it. I certainly wouldn't. Like, I love the show more than, like, I love what I do, but the show is the show. And, you know, I'm not going to bite the hand that feeds me a little bit, but I will occasionally try to keep my earnest and honest feelings about what's going on. If I don't like something, I will voice that as best I can in the most eloquent way possible. So I don't want to piss the higher ups off. They have once given me a copyright strike. That was devastating. I was like, 3 of those and you're out. Like, your channel goes down. I'm like, oh my God, I got one. I appealed it, and the next day they took it back. And I learned that copyright strikes are done manually, and they have to send something to YouTube to have that video removed. And strangely, they took it down right away, which I don't know what happened, crossed wires, but that was like a huge, that was another big moment for me. I'm like, oh my, like, I can actually reverse the curse, you know, of the
hourglass.
I can smash. Yeah, I can literally smash the hourglass. Just appeal to their like kinder side, and they took it back. Like that was all manual. That was not an algorithm or a bot or whatever. Mm-hmm. So to see that gave me a lot of encouragement. I don't know. But as far as the future goes, they're just sort of winging it and hoping for the best. And I wouldn't even say I'm planning for the worst yet, but you know, maybe one day.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Something I've been curious about as an editor, or at least, you know, previously an editor, when it comes to the B-roll,
mm-hmm.
what's your process? I imagine like you have all of the episodes of Big Brother and Survivor like stored somewhere, like organized multiple, in a way. Yeah. Like
multiple hard drives.
Yeah. I imagine at this point, like years in, you're at a point probably where you're writing a script and you have certain scenes in mind already. But like, what was it like developing that process? Like, do you have like scenes that you already like you have ready to go now that like are organized in different like themes? Like,
as far as B-roll goes, I think I don't have any particular like organization, like literal organization for B-roll footage, but that is easily like the magic trick. People are like, how do you avoid copyright? I'm like, just replace the B-roll with other B-roll from the show and they won't catch you because the algorithm bot looks for sequence of like from the episode one to one. So that's the trick. You're wondering like, how do you have like they don't even seem to go for audio very much. Interestingly.
I've wondered about that. Yeah.
I had somebody recently reach out to me and ask about copyright because people want to upload videos or do something, but they're like, you know, copyright. And absolutely, most of my time is spent either researching or trying to avoid copyright. By far, like, and I think copyright probably takes the most time out of my schedule, out of the whole process, week to week, video to video. Because every clip of every video I have is started at around less than 25 seconds per clip. Mm-hmm. It has now been reduced to around 10 seconds per clip. So if you get a 15 minute video, if you just do the basic math at a minimum, what is that? Like, you're going to get at least 6 clips per minute times that by 15. But even then that would be a lazy job. So that is very time consuming to have constant. The hardest part for me is actually editing, like, if I ever have to include like a long speech at like a nomination ceremony or something, because there's not much B-roll for nomination ceremonies. So it's hard to like not make it look jarring. The process has been, I have a long, like, as I've gotten into it, like I've rewatched so many seasons of the show that I have such a strong memory of almost every season of both shows that I can recall. If you bring up a topic, I can usually like think of something and I remember it. Like I was just before we talked today, looking for one clip for this video. It's the last clip I needed to finish this 22 minute video I was putting together. And it was the topic was the seasons of Survivor that have changed the game the most, and diving into what exactly was the, what were the seasons and why. And I wanted this clip of Stephen Fishback saying something about how the game has evolved, like strategy, the evolution of strategy or whatever at Cambodia. And I'm like, that is such like a on the nose clip. I need it. And I know he said it somewhere and I found it in the first go. I was like, I think it's the Merge Tribal Council of Cambodia. And it was. And so a lot of it is like, I know of these clips just by having memories of watching them and remembering the conversation around them from years ago and rewatching it with my wife. She's never seen a lot of the seasons, so I rewatch it with her and it refreshes my memory. I don't know. I'm just able to compartmentalize a lot of the seasons by seasons. Also compare it to like the day and the year of when I watched them, what it was like at that time. I remember it pretty well. I don't know if that's like, I think it's like photographic memory, anything like that. I just have a strong sense of remembering. I call it like my Rolodex of Survivor clips. I can just extract one. I will say one thing I'd like to do more is try to remember it better so that I can incorporate it into the script. Yeah. I do occasionally incorporate it. A lot of the times I have the notes, the research, and I take all of that and write up the script without the clips in mind. And then I'll add the clips in after. Occasionally I'll like find something that as I'm editing, I'll be like, oh, I should add a couple of me, a couple, like a line or two of me introducing the clip or saying something to seamlessly transition into it. So I'll do that occasionally. It's like a random hodgepodge of as far as the process goes. But yeah, I mean, B-roll is all over the place. B-roll is honestly like the saving grace for copyright. If you want to like ever make any money on a YouTube video when it comes to at least Survivor Big Brother, I don't know what it's like for the other shows, but like take advantage of all the B-roll footage because there's a lot of B-roll footage in Survivor Big Brother. And anyway, yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, because I made a few videos on the Wheel of Time, and I think mm-hmm. I think it was like there was a certain length, I don't remember what it was, where I noticed that like, okay, I included a clip with audio that was, or not, no, you know what, it wasn't with audio, it was just an uninterrupted clip from the show that was too long, and that got mm-hmm. like oh, this is a warning, and I was like, okay, I'll just cut that down.
Yeah.
And so
it was trial and error for me. Mm-hmm. I took a good year of trial and error to finally get to a comfortable spot where like I haven't received a copyright claim in a while, many, many months of uploading. Occasionally I will say Sony started giving me audio copyrights, which is very annoying. And it was mm-hmm. really just for Survivor All-Stars. So now I'm like very wary to include All-Stars audio footage. They would get it for the audio. It wasn't even the video.
Weird.
And it was always background music at challenges, which is annoying because I have found a lot of these hacks are from All-Star seasons. Like I had one recently with Shein on All-Stars. And I was like, I don't want to put the video up, accrue a lot of views, and then get a copyright claim like 2 hours later. Mm-hmm. And then have to like argue, battle with Sony. Sony will not respond, but they will wait out the clock for 30 days to like drop the copyright. So I'm like, and then what they do is they check on like day 29 and then they refresh the copyright. So I have to wait another 30 days. And at one point I pushed them so hard. I was like, the ball's in your court. If you want to sue me, go for it. And they didn't. And they dropped the copyright claim. So I'm like, now I can kind of know how far I can push it. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of nice, I guess. But just sort of testing the water, getting a little bit risky there. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel this way sometimes. Like, wouldn't it be great if you just had the raw footage of the...
It would be easy. Just
cut that music right out.
I think, I would be able to produce more videos if I didn't spend so much time having to avoid copyright. Mm-hmm. Like maybe I should reach out to CBS and like get into a contract where they just whitelist me from their copyright bot and let me do whatever. Give me free reign. Obviously they're going to want to coach. I don't know, but I mean,
I feel like, I feel like that's difficult, like because of how like automated it is. I remember, I think it might've been like Mike Shinoda or something who started streaming on Twitch. And he was like, people were like, oh, this is great. Like you can stream Linkin Park music. And he was like, no, I can't.
You can't.
There's nothing I can do. Even if you own the rights to the music, like if it's on the list, unless you don't strike anybody, it strikes everybody. And you then have to just like manually, shift it in the other direction. It's rough stuff.
I feel like I've been pretty lucky so far. I've only had a couple of videos blocked ever. And, those are definitely some of the low points of my days. Or if I get a copyright claim, it's the worst email I'll ever get is I know exactly what it looks like. And I'm like, oh no, like all the people who know, who make these Survivor YouTubers, I've had conversations with them and it's like, yeah, that's, I'll contact them and be like, how's it going with the copyrights? Like, is everything okay? And give them an update. They'll give me an update. So.
Well, yeah. I guess it's kind of like getting a demerit at work, right? And you just like you call to the manager's office or something like, all right, we caught you. I don't know.
It's like an AI. It's just an ID system that doesn't really know what's happening, which is even worse. Cause I'm like, I can't even appeal to any sensibility or anything like that. And when I have, it's generally worked out. So it's unfortunate, but I get it. There's probably so much out there, but
It's a weird thing.
It's very weird.
Yeah. But thanks for doing this with me. This is fun.
This is really fun. I'm thankful. Thank you for inviting me. I know it was a couple months ago you reached out and I said, absolutely. I'd love to sit down and talk. And like we said this last time we talked with Survivor, but like we spend so much time interacting, but with the whole Goose Goose Duck stuff.
And yeah.
I've met a lot of people through that, but I also haven't.
Yep.
because I don't actually know them that well. I know their name. I know their voice when they're lying to me.
Yeah, right.
I can tell really well if I meet them in real life when they might be like giving me a white lie.
Mm.
Maybe. Some of them are pretty good still. I can't figure it out. But yeah, it's been awesome like getting to know you and then, you know, talking to you about Survivor, Big Brother, or just whatever. It's cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, even like even just podcasting with people, it's tough sometimes because like you have a little bit of time before and after the podcast where you'll chat. But it's also like, you know, like you can't really do too much before. And then after you're kind of tired. You're kind of exhausted. You don't want to be like sitting there forever most of the time. So there's not usually like a ton of opportunity to like get to know people too well. Even though you spend so much time talking to them. Which is, you know, again, part of why I like doing, you know, this podcast, because it's just a good excuse to be like, you know, hey, let's just jump on a call and chat for a while.
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought I was like, this is a great idea. And I've listened to a bunch of your previous interviews and I've always enjoyed them. It's really interesting to hear where all these different people, especially because they're all sort of in this similar community of the RCV stuff. And I can recognize almost all their names. It's really fascinating to listen to, you know, like, to talk more than just the surface level goose duck among us video game, you know, banter, which I love. I find that very fun too. I keep coming back to it because it's so much fun. But it's really interesting to hear like who the people are behind the avatars and behind the logos and behind even the voices to some extent, because you get to hear them talk about things more than, if you're interested, you get to hear them talk about things more than just what's on the live feeds or what's happening in the latest episode or what their thoughts are and the strategies. Like, what are their thoughts on their actual life and their actual living situation and like their future and their past and who knows whatever else. I wanted to say though, if you're ever playing, I'm a huge video game player and I know you play games.
Yes.
So in the event, I know you've said in the past that like, you don't, if you, your door is always open if people are interested. So I'm like, at some point, I think I'm currently in the middle of like crunching again for the next few months to get these videos ready, but I'm going to be stopping soon. And just in the future, I'm always like, if you ever have any multiplayer games that you're playing, you're like, I'm always available.
Yeah.
I'm always around. I'm currently trying to get through with the sequel to Horizon. I'm going to pop onto Elden Ring after that because I'm looking forward to it. I love Dark Souls.
I've been playing Elden Ring a lot.
I've heard it. I know it looks really good. I've been watching some people on Twitch.
It's very good. I can't play it online though, because I have to use a thing to let my ultra wide have ultra wide support.
Oh, okay. System.
I mean, I can't like if I was like if I knew I had someone to play with though, I could probably just switch it to my other monitor and not run the ultra wide thing.
What are you playing it on PC?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I wasn't sure.
It's great. It's great though. It's really like it's totally grabbed me. What I've been doing is I've been playing Elden Ring and watching back our old like Among Us and Goose Duck streams. And then like when a round like stands out to me as particularly entertaining, I pop it in Premiere and I just edit it together. And I've edited like a ton of them. And I want to release them at some point.
You're editing the like Goose Duck rounds?
Yeah.
For what, like, what are you doing with that?
I don't know. I'll just put them up on my YouTube channel. I figured like I'd put out like a round a day or something at some point. And I feel like there are a couple of like fun things we could do. I could do too. Like so far I started out putting like grabbing clips of like, I'll put this in a montage, but then eventually I was like, okay, that's just way too much work. I'm just going to do rounds for now. But like, there are definitely like montages of, like Scally killing me or, like Puya sussing Kirsten, like things that happen like all the time.
Yeah.
There've been some good ones and I've been enjoying watching them back. And also like, I was telling him on this the other day, like I have this thing, and I always had this as an editor where when you edit something, you get so familiar with the material, and like the actors or whatever else, like the people in the thing that you're editing. And so like, I'll be watching these things and editing these clips. And then like, I jump on a call with you or Iman or somebody and I'm like, I was just chatting with you. Oh no, that was just me watching the thing.
Just listening
that was
to you.
Yeah. That was just me like editing the same clip of you over and over.
That's a concept. Like I listen to these podcasts with all of you guys and then I jump on and I hear your voices like, you know, the very next day. And it's always a, interesting, being sucked into the podcast or something, into that, you know, a different universe.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's also funny, like, because I feel like I'm sure you get this too, because you don't really show your face in your videos. So like people know your voice, but not necessarily, they don't necessarily connect it to your face. And like, for me, it's like the, you know, I've obviously seen your face plenty of times, but more often I've seen your voice associated with, like a goose or, a little Among Us character, right?
Yeah.
So like there's always like a period of adjustment where it's like okay, this is the guy. He's not a goose.
Not yet. Although my last name is pretty close to goose. I was called Goose Boy as a nickname growing up.
Oh boy.
So there you go. Yeah.
Was that an accepted nickname or one you didn't care for?
I was sort of indifferent to it. It was like the people who called me that I wasn't friends with, but it was also like, whatever, like it's not that big of a deal. So whatever. And it kind of stopped after a year or so anyway, but it was just cause my name is Geis and it looks like geese or goose. So, I had a lot of nicknames growing up. Like my name is Billy, but my real name is Brian, but I also have, my name Billy was derived from my middle name, William. Mm. So like going by Peridium isn't a big deal at all. It's just another name out there. People have called me all kinds of, they've even touched on the fact that like I go by Billy. So if you know me, you call me Billy. If you don't know me, like a teacher or a doctor, you're going to call me Brian or an Uber driver or whatever. Mm-hmm. So like going back to the first question of like, who is Peridium? But I don't know. It's just another name. It's just another name out there. It's just one of the long list of nicknames I've had, including Goose Boy at some point. So,
well, I mean, you said you were always fascinated with the idea of like, you know, being a character, right? Like stepping into somebody else's shoes.
Yeah, a little bit, just experiencing life beyond what I have and as best you can. It's a fascinating concept, but it's just like, wow, I got, you know, in some ways lucky, in some ways unlucky to be who I am. And I'm like, what would it have been like if I was anyone else? I'll never know. That's something unless something more out there, but still, I'll probably never get to know that. And that's just a fascinating concept that gripped me for a while. But oh well.
Oh well.
Never know. But yeah, no, thank you for this. It was fun. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for doing it. Make sure, if anyone listening, if you have not already checked out Peridium's YouTube channel, make sure you do so. Is there anything else that you're doing or that you want people to check out?
I don't think so. I mean, it's pretty much been the same tempo for the past 5 years, just YouTube videos every week. Survivor, Big Brother.
You still streaming on Twitch at all?
You know, I haven't been, and I keep waiting for an excuse to get back. Partially because my computer started to really break down at the end of last year. Mm. And like my friend helped me build it, who knows a lot more about computers than I do. And it's a beast of a computer, but the also downside is like, he gave me the fish. He didn't teach me how to fish.
Yeah,
sort of. And I'm like, I need to keep on tab. I need to be on best terms with you because I don't know. And so like at one point it started breaking and he had to come over, but I had to wait a little bit. So my computer, I was like, I need my computer to work. I don't know if streaming on Twitch isn't a vital recipe, part of the recipe. So I'm just going to stop that for now. Focus on just getting the bare minimum done. I recently got it fixed. I don't know. I love YouTube more than Twitch. Twitch is fun, but I'm fine with being more of a passenger than a pilot.
Yeah.
I might get back on the Twitch at some point if I feel like I have more that I want to talk about. But right now I'm just sort of investing all my time into the YouTube videos, getting ahead of schedule. I'm also now disseminating. I created a clips channel where I'm taking basically the work I've already been doing for my actual videos and just taking clips of what I'm doing. Either it's my voice or it's just an edited clip from my video itself. Mm-hmm. And uploading that to a different YouTube channel for people to enjoy. Cause I know that there's a lot of people out there who just like to watch like a 30-second clip from the show. But it's edited. It's all edited. It's all copyright safe because it's actually from my main channel. And then also I started doing it on TikTok. So that's one other thing. Like, I guess if you're on TikTok, all four of you out there, you can follow me on TikTok. But that's a weird platform that I just recently jumped on not long ago. And it's interesting. I found somebody was stealing my content and uploading it. Just straight up ripping an entire video and uploading it like in 10 parts. And I was like, and they were getting crazy views, like a million views per clip.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, yeah. First of all, I don't like that you're stealing my content, but also you're doing really well. Like, it's like crap. Like, okay, I think I should be doing that then. Why am I? That's like just telling me, okay, I need to do something. So I recently have been doing that, and I'm going to hopefully keep juggling that one too. So, but otherwise, just YouTube, nothing else.
All right. Well, thank you again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And there you go. That was Peridium. Thank you so much for joining me on this podcast, listening to this conversation. I hope you found it interesting. I had a lot of questions about the YouTube game and how Peridium got a start. And I feel like we got to know him a little better. We got to know who Peridium really is. So thank you so much for joining me. Make sure you, of course, find me over on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taren Armstrong. Check out all the Big Brother coverage we're doing. Survivor as well. I'm sure Peridium will be getting on another one of these Survivor Stockwatch podcasts. So make sure you check that out when it happens. And you can also find me on Twitter @ArmstrongTaren. Thank you so much once again for joining me here on The Taren Show. And I will see you next time.
It's The Taren Show.